which Christian will meet. With those introductions made, I'll call our first case, 00-0589, Meyer v. Champs Sports Bar and Grill. Attorney Barbara Nider will address the court representing Jason Meyer. Ms. Nider.
May it please the court. My name is Barbara Nider, and I represent the plaintiff appellant, Jason Meyer, who appears in this action by his mother and guardian, Barbara Meyer. Seated at council table with me here today is my partner, Bruce Hubricks. Why are we here today? We're here because in 1994, the employees and owners of Champs Sports Bar and Grill didn't do what the law required them to do. They didn't check IDs to see whether Jason Meyer and his friends Adam and Brian were of legal drinking age. Jason and Adam weren't, and shouldn't have been served any alcohol. But the folks at Champs apparently were more concerned about making money than they were about the law or the health and safety of their young customers. So they served Jason and his two friends alcohol, 8 to 10 pitchers of beer, followed by a couple of rounds of Jack Daniels and Coke, over more than a 6-hour period. And during that entire time, nobody asked if these gentlemen were of legal drinking age. The results were devastating for Jason, who suffered a serious head injury in a car accident that occurred when Adam, who was drunk, drove the car off the road shortly after the boys left Champs. The trial court said that Champs and its owners can't be held responsible to Jason for the part they played in causing Adam to drive drunk, because Jason paid for some of the alcohol that Adam drank. The trial court was wrong. That's why we're here. I'd like to make 2 points about the statutory construction aspect of this case, first of all. First, the trial court was wrong in concluding that Section 125.035 clearly and unambiguously grants the tavern defendants immunity. It doesn't. This court shouldn't read language into the statute that isn't there. The second point that I'll talk about is that the interpretation that the tavern defendants urge you to adopt is absurd, and it's unworkable, and therefore could not have been what the legislature intended.
Counsel, just so I understand, you said that Jason purchased, but also, as I understand the facts, Adam also purchased.
Adam also purchased.
For himself.
Yes, he did. And the evidence is that the money, it's difficult to tell who put in exactly how much, but yes, Adam also purchased. The legislature didn't clearly and unambiguously grant the tavern defendants immunity for the injuries that Jason suffered. And the issue turns on the interpretation of Section 125.035. I think it's important to focus on what the legislature was doing when it enacted that section. It was not creating a cause of action. What it was doing was creating immunity for a certain group of defendants. That's very important, because when the legislature is changing existing common law, the statute has to be viewed very narrowly, has to be read strictly. And so here, in interpreting this statute, the grant of immunity has to be read narrowly. You don't want to change the common law any more than what the legislature intended. And we submit that it's not clear under this statute that Jason's disqualified from being a third party. And when it's not clear, you can't go the extra step of granting broader immunity than what the legislature might have intended. So, and that's really the end of the argument.
The plain meaning that you ascribe to the statute, as I read it, it were a substantial factor in causing injury to a third party. Now here you have Jason, who was there underage, but was procuring, which you jump back up to two, the alcohol which the driver, Adam had, as well as Adam purchasing for himself, regardless of what the age was. Because you say the key factor is the lack of checking IDs.
The lack of checking IDs, because the checking IDs would have put this tavern back into the group of defendants that has immunity. What the legislature said is if you, in good faith, check IDs, if somebody misleads you, if somebody brings in a false ID, you can still be immune.
Well, does this knock the word provider out? As you read the statute, it talks about providing alcohol. Was Meyer a provider?
Under this court's ruling in Miller 2, Meyer was a provider because he procured by putting money in the pot, essentially, money that he knew would be used to purchase alcohol. That makes him a provider. Does it knock him out from also being a third party? No, because you've got multiple providers here. You've got the tavern. Adam could be a provider. Jason could be a provider. Brian's a provider. He went to the bar, too. So you've got a lot of different providers here. What the provider aspect of the statute looks at is who has immunity. It doesn't look at who has a cause of action. A third party has a cause of action. And I'm saying that the simple meaning, the simple language that's used in this statute leads to the conclusion that Jason's a third party. As to him, the tavern is the provider. Adam is the underage drinker driver. Those are the first two parties. Jason's the third party. Now, I understand that Judge Frankel disagreed with that and said, you have to look at what the transaction is, and because Jason was a party to the transaction, then he can't be a third party.
Well, suppose Adam had been hurt here. Could he sue Jason?
I'm sorry,
Adam
had been hurt, could he sue Jason? Yes, he could. Yes, he could, because Jason has no immunity, because he was in the status of a provider. And as between the two of them...
Provider who knew that these people were underage.
Were underage, exactly. And
as between... So your position is Champs is a provider.
Yes.
And not immune.
And not immune.
Because he did not seek identity, et cetera.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Champs is not immune. Neither are Champs owners or the employees of Champs. They're all in the same boat when it comes to that. And what Judge Frankel said is, well, we've got to look at the statute and say he's not a third party, because a third party is somebody removed from the transaction. That's the interpretation Judge Frankel put on this statute. But I submit that that's not the common way that we use third party. The term third party doesn't mean somebody removed from a transaction. Look at Ralph Nader. He's the third party candidate. Is he removed from the transaction? No. He may be, but he isn't yet.
Counsel, when I read Judge Frankel's opinion, it was not lengthy in discussion. Essentially, that portion of it, essentially it said that Jason is a provider because he helped pay for the beverages. Adam was the recipient, and so that puts Jason as the first party, if you will, provider. Adam is the second party, and therefore the first party can't be the third party. I mean, that's what he said. Do you
yes.
agree with that? I mean, do you agree that's what he said?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Is your argument that Jason is not a provider?
No, but there are multiple providers
okay.
here.
You know, I wonder if it ties into the language in the statute. Dealing with this language, I'm looking in sub B. Of 125.0354B.
Why don't we just have Marshall? Would you just turn that so that everybody else can see it as well as the court? Please.
Subsection 4?
4B, yes.
It's fine, because we all have copies of that. Mm-hmm. All right.
Thank you. The language that I'm focusing on is... and you do in part of your brief, too. If the alcohol beverages provided to the underage person were a substantial factor in causing injury to a third party, do you understand that language to mean that, for instance, in this case, Jason provided some alcohol, let's say he provided one pitcher, and to the group, and let's say Adam provided four pitchers. Let's say Brian did have money and he provided a couple of pitchers. Are you suggesting that there has to be a tracing of if the alcohol, again referring to the statute, if the alcohol beverages provided to the underage person, I'm putting in a parenthesis, by the provider, were a substantial factor in causing the injuries. Are you suggesting that you can say, okay, this was one pitcher, and so that was maybe not a substantial factor, because let's say hypothetically Brian bought five pitchers, and so that was a substantial. Are you nuancing it that way so that you divide it into parts as to if the alcohol provided parentheses by the provider was a substantial factor? Do you understand my question?
Yeah, I do understand your question. You nuance it that way if you're looking to who has immunity, not to who has a cause of action.
Well, and I don't think Judge Frankel nuanced it in that fashion.
I think he glossed over it, and I think he glossed over...
He deals with it as one transaction, if you will.
Well, he does, but what's the transaction? Is it the accident? Is it the providing of the alcohol? I mean, that's ambiguous as well as the term third party. And again, when you think of what a common third party is, it is somebody involved in the transaction.
How do you interpret this language? Are you suggesting that, in your interpretation, that if the alcohol beverages provided to the underage person by, pick a name, by X, were a substantial factor in causing an injury to a third party when in X, Y, and Z were providers? I mean, are you suggesting that that's what you have to show, that one pitcher was a substantial factor?
You don't have to show that one pitcher was a substantial factor. The point here is that all of the alcohol came from Champs. So there's no question that the alcohol that Champs provided was a substantial factor. So there's no need to parse out anything here.
So there's no question, obviously, that Champs, from your point of view,
yes,
that Champs was a provider and that Jason was a provider.
Yes. And the question of whether Jason ultimately is immune from prosecution depends upon the one pitcher, perhaps. If what he bought, procured, provided, dispensed, whatever the word is that you want to use in the statute, one pitcher, then maybe it wasn't a substantial factor. But here, there's no question but that Champs bought 100% of the alcohol. And when you look at the common meaning of the terms here, third party can be someone involved in the transaction. You've got a third party complaint. The third party in a third party complaint is right in the middle of that action. It's not somebody removed. So I think that Judge Frankel was reading a very legalistic interpretation of that term when he looked at Black's Law Dictionary and said, oh, it's somebody who's not a party to the transaction. That's not how we use that term. And the language in the statute is to be afforded its common meaning, what people on the street take that to mean. And here you've got a first party, the provider of 100% of the alcohol. You've got a second party. You've got Adam, who drank that alcohol. And then you've got a third party, Jason. I think that's the ordinary meaning, and to go beyond that reads into the statute something that just isn't there, an innocence requirement that I don't see anywhere in the language of the statute.
Let me, there were 8 pitchers of beer.
8 to 10.
Okay.
I think they lost
Jason
track.
Jason bought one. Your client. He bought one, is that correct?
We don't know who bought what.
Okay. Well, let's assume he bought none. Would he still be a provider?
Depends. The way the legislature and the interpretations of this statute have gone, it talks about somebody who is dispensing.
Mm-hmm.
What if he poured the pitcher?
What about those that Jason unquestionably did not buy?
As to those, he's not a provider, and that's the point. He's not a provider.
Isn't that the problem with Judge Frankel's opinion?
That's the problem with Judge Frankel's opinion, is that he glossed over that. Jason's not a provider as to those at all. And as to those, he's got a cause of action regardless of whether you read the term third party the way Judge Frankel reads it or not. He's got a cause of action as to the alcohol he didn't provide. And that just makes sense to me, because you're talking about common principles of comparative negligence here.
So then you are really nuancing it. You are saying he provided a little bit, but he didn't provide, maybe there are five providers, he only provided a little bit. I mean, you're dividing, and you're suggesting that he should be responsible only for that portion of alcohol that he provided?
That's comparative negligence. And I'm saying, I'm not nuancing it when I'm talking about the definition of third party.
Now,
he's a third party regardless.
How can, maybe that can be, but I wonder, how can that be? I mean, how can there be proof of, you've got 10 pitchers, someone provides some. I mean, is there going to be testimony that Adam drank 2.5 glasses each 8 ounce from that pitcher purchased by Jason? And with regard to the picture, I mean, you know, that's just craziness.
Oh, I don't think it is, because I don't think you're going to have testimony that's that specific. You're not going to have to get into that, because the comparison here is going to be what portion of the responsibility did we put on Champs that provided 100% of the alcohol under circumstances in which the legislature has imposed an obligation on that tavern, an obligation of protective intervention, and they thumbed their nose at it. They're in the verdict.
I thought your argument was going to be that a first party can be a third party. But your argument is that Jason is, when we first got this kid, but your argument is that Jason is not a first party.
First party in the sense.
Being a provider. I mean, I heard you say Jason is a provider. But
yes.
Then I also heard you say that Jason is not a first party, suggesting that he's only a third party.
Well, as Justice Bablish pointed out, as to the alcohol that he had nothing to do with, that came from the bar with Adam's money or with Brian's money, and that Adam drank, Jason's not a provider under the definitions of this court. So if you want to parse it out that way, sure you can. I don't know that you need to get that far, because I'm saying we don't have to go that step because he's a third party under the common language of this statute.
Let me see if I understand what you're saying. What I hear you saying is that your number one argument is that a provider can be a third party under
can
the
be.
Statute. Yes.
Can be.
Provider. And Judge Frankel said a provider can't be a third party. That's where your basic disagreement is. And certainly you're saying, as a second step, as to the alcoholic beverages that Jason did not provide, he's not even a provider under the statute.
That's correct. That's exactly the argument. And I think that makes sense. It's consistent with common sense, because if you look at the interpretation that the defendants are urging here, you have a situation in which you're going to have to get into that parsing. What if Jason put a nickel on the table? He's a provider. Now all of a sudden he's got no cause of action? I don't think so. What about the situation in Miller 1 where you had Rhonda Miller? Rhonda Miller was the one who got her friend. She was underage. She got a 21-year-old friend to buy beer using money that a bunch of other people had contributed. In that case, she had a cause of action. She consumed and she procured. Now, granted, the court didn't focus on her procuring that, but I see no distinction between somebody who's drinking, at least under Judge Frankel's notion of being a party to the transaction, somebody who's drinking along, and somebody who gets an adult, a 21-year-old, to provide the alcohol for them. That's what she did, and she had a cause of action. And now we're going to say that because Jason put some unidentified amount of money on the table, that rules him out? That, to me, is an absurd result, and that couldn't have been what the legislature was trying to get to.
Counsel, could I ask you, how do we approach analytically the interpretation of this statute? Is it ambiguous?
It is ambiguous. And
why?
It's, It's ambiguous because we don't know who the plaintiff can be. It talks about a provider and what a provider has to do, but it doesn't say who can be a claimant under the statute, other than somebody unidentified. And the definition of third party is ambiguous. I think this court has found this statute to be ambiguous in Miller 2. The court in Kwiatkowski found it ambiguous, and the court found it ambiguous in Miller 1. It's just not clear what a third party means. And what we're trying to do, what we're mixing here, is the question of what a third party is and whether it needs to be an innocent third party. And I think that's a really important distinction here. Because under the statute, it's the first party, the second party, and then Jason. And it's a separate question as to whether the legislature intended that that third party be innocent. If they had, they could have written innocent third parties. But they didn't do that. And I think this court shouldn't go that step and write that in when it's not clear, because that would be creating immunity beyond what the common law ever envisioned.
If we go beyond the plain language of the statute, how can you say that the legislature would have intended to permit Jason to sue in as much as he is a procurer, a payer, a provider, a distributor? Explain that to me.
Why the legislature would have permitted that? Because it adds to the deterrence that this statute is intended to accomplish. You want to deter underage drinking. That's why the legislature put statutes in effect that prohibit bars from selling to underage drinkers. There's a notion of protection for these underage folks as well, and there's an acknowledgement that the underage drinkers don't have the same level of judgment that maybe an adult does, and particularly that an adult establishment whose job it is to follow the law does. That's why there's this extra protective element in here. And I think it's totally reasonable for the legislature to look at this and say, as between the underage or the injured person, whether they're underage or not, and the provider of 100% of the alcohol, let's apportion that negligence by comparative negligence. Let's not just automatically rule out the third party because the third party put a nickel on the table. That, to me, is nonsense. And I don't believe that the legislature intended to enact nonsense.
Would your argument be any different if Jason had been the driver?
Well, then the Kwiatkowski case comes into play. And as to Jason as the driver, I think it's a more difficult case. Because the Court of Appeals in Kwiatkowski distinguished between the driver and a third party and said if you're the tortfeasor, you can't be the third party at the same time. So they tried to give meaning to the term third party by doing that. That's not the case we have here. Jason's not the driver. He's removed from that. He's the third party.
But
and
doesn't
that's exactly
the argument
the point.
Of the public policy argument and the legislative policy argument of deterrence play the same whether Jason is the driver or the injured party? Hey, we're going to deter taverns from engaging in this type of behavior. By definition, in this kind of situation, the tavern provides, as you say, 100% because they're selling it, you know. So it seems to me that Kwiatkowski thwarts the public policy of deterrence that you're suggesting, because Kwiatkowski said if you're a driver and you injure yourself, there's no cause of action. If you provided the alcohol and you injure yourself, as I understand Kwiatkowski. So if you're a driver, we don't want to deter bars, but if you're not a driver, we do want to deter bars. But what sense does that make it with regard to the public policy of deterring?
Well, I think this court has found, and I happen to agree, that the reasoning behind what the legislature did doesn't necessarily make sense. I know the Sorensen case, there was a long line of decisions that finally led to this court overturning the common law immunity that taverns had enjoyed for so many years. It's not for us to question the wisdom of the legislature's choice in drawing the line right there between a driver and a third party.
How about drawing the line between a provider and a non-provider?
Well, if you're asking me if I think Kwiatkowski is wrong, the answer is yes. I think it's wrongly decided because it was ambiguous in that instance as well as to whether the driver had a cause of action. And that ambiguity, taken with the rule of construing statutes narrowly when they're in derogation of common law, that would have suggested that ambiguity is enough to not extend immunity to these people under that circumstance. But we don't need to decide that here today. What we need to decide is whether Jason has a cause of action as a third party, not as a driver. And that's that line that the legislature, that the Court of Appeals found that the legislature drew in Kwiatkowski doesn't come into play. Now, in terms of deterrence, I think the legislature might have viewed it differently. They might have viewed that driver as more culpable. Getting behind the wheel of the car adds yet another layer of responsibility to it. And they might have chosen to draw the line there for that reason. So it's not totally unreasonable to have these two groups, the third party and the driver, who would be treated differently under the meaning of the statute. I see the red light is on.
Well, then, let me just see if I understand it. Your position is that where a provider, which is here Jason, as well as Champs, provides alcohol to an underage driver, I mean, that's the whole point about this, right? Who's Adam? That the provider, suppose there wasn't Champs in the position here, maybe just Jason gets all this liquor and provides it to Adam, and then Jason is injured. You think Jason should be protected under the statute?
Well, the question...
Jason can recover.
Well, who's the provider?
Suppose
Jason?
Jason's the provider.
Jason is the provider, so Jason would be suing Jason.
Oh, but there's always an insurance company.
Jason would be suing Jason's insurance company? Well, I think you're back to the issue of comparative negligence.
Okay, you finally wind up with comparison negligence.
I do, because that's where Sorensen and Kobach wound up. They talked about looking at the vendor as the same as anybody else, the same as any other tortfeasor, and using negligence principles to sort out where things land. And I don't think the legislature has clearly changed that. And that's where I end up, that this doesn't say innocent third party. It says third party. And it would have been so easy to take that ambiguity away if that's what the legislature had intended, but they didn't do that.
Suppose Champs, instead of Jason being hurt, suppose the Adam ran through Champs's bar windows, caused substantial property damage. Can Champs recover?
From Champs. Again, it becomes...
From Jason.
From Jason.
Yeah. Champs can recover.
If they can show that Jason is a provider of the alcohol, that was a substantial factor. I mean, you're looking at whether you can take away Jason's immunity there. And you can if he fits within being...
But does he? In the same fact situation. Other than they crashed through Champs's building. Champs sue Jason?
If they crash through?
Champs's building.
Jason is in the verdict, yes. In terms of his contribution, if they can prove that Adam was negligent in riding through the window and that the alcohol that Jason provided was a substantial factor, he's not immune.
And the only issue would be Champs's contributory negligence.
The issue would be Champs's contributory negligence, and I go back to 100% of the alcohol that puts them in the verdict right at the top.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Snyder. Bruce Davey, representing Champs's Sports Bar and Grill. Mr. Davey. Ms. Snyder, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
May it please the court, my name is Bob Whitney. I'm a partner of Mr. Davies. I will take part of the argument. Mr. Davies will take the rest. I will address the issues that Attorney Nieder has just addressed.
I'm sorry, which issues are you going to address?
The question of the scope of the term third party.
Okay.
I'm glad that Attorney Nieder agrees that the question before this court is the scope of the term third party. The question before this court is, who does the claim belong to? That's the only question before this court. And if we look at the common law and the common usage dictionary definition of third party, we come to one conclusion. Judge Frankel was right. A third party is separate from the first and second parties. In this statute, we have a first party, the provider. We have a second party, the underage person. We have a transaction between the first and the second party. The provider furnishes the second party, the underage person, with alcohol. That's the transaction, which is the evil at which this statute is aimed. This is a remedial statute. The statute attempts to remedy that evil, to deter that transaction, to deter any provider, and it doesn't limit it to vendors, any provider from providing alcohol to underage persons under these circumstances. As we know, provider is defined to include people like Jason, who are procurers, anybody who sells or gives away or furnishes the alcohol.
So, Mr. Whitney, if Jason had not bought any of it, but was simply in the presence of Adam and Brian and drank with them, then he would be a third party and not a provider.
Yes.
Now, and then if he buys a pitcher, then now he's a provider.
Under the Miller versus Thome Act, that's true.
Is he a provider as to all of the beer that Adam bought?
He is a provider. And the court doesn't nuance between how much is provided. In Miller versus Thomack, the court was careful to say, we're not going to split hairs in defining provider between someone who puts in...
So your answer is, once he provides one, he's in it for the
whole... He's a provider. We're not going to split hairs.
What if instead of buying one pitcher, he only has a nickel in his pocket, and he throws the nickel into the pot? Is he now a provider?
He is, under the court's broad reading of Thomack. The facts here are that they both boys bought drinks for each other. They took turns buying rounds for each other. This is not that kind of hard fact situation that the court is addressing. But in any event, the way the court's decision in Miller versus Thomack reads is, we're not going to say that the person who carries a beer 3 feet is different from the person who contributes money. We're not going to split those hairs. A provider is a provider. And a provider is defined for purposes of the statute, and a provider is used here. The statute doesn't say a provider dash vendor or a provider dash bar. It says all providers. And providers include procurers, and they include the plaintiff here. No matter what degree he provided to, he cannot be a plaintiff. Now, why can't he be a plaintiff? Because he is not a party to the transaction, because he is a party to the transaction which the legislature is trying to remedy. The legislature is trying to deter the furnishing by a provider of alcohol to an underage minor. Anybody who participates in that transaction is a first party, a provider, a second party, the recipient. And the third party, this is how Judge Frankel described it, and I think this is how the formula is set up. both in the common law and the statute. There's a first party, a second party, and a third party. The claim belongs to the third party.
So it's your argument, I think it follows from your argument, that the legislature, in enacting this statute, eliminated contributory negligence for anybody who provides beer.
Not at all. The statute still provides that there is a comparison of negligence.
Well, no, you're not allowing a comparison between Jason and Champs here. You're saying that if Jason supplied a nickel, if Jason supplied an 8-ounce glass of beer, and Champs supplied 6 pitchers, the jury has no opportunity to compare the negligence of the two. He's out.
I didn't make myself clear. The provider, what I mean is that the person who contributes the small amount can be sued. There's a claim against him. He's a party to the transaction. He's a party to the transaction, okay? Now, ultimately, the jury will compare the proximate cause between the degree of proximate cause between the first and second, how much they contributed.
Let's take my absurd situation of a nickel.
Yes.
Okay, nickel into the pot, and Adam puts in $10.
Yes.
Now, you're saying that as between those two, the way you interpret this statute is the legislature threw out comparative negligence because the jury does not have an opportunity to decide whether or not that 5 cents was a lesser of a contribution to the injuries than Adams.
No, Your Honor, they both go on the verdict, and the jury does compare them.
If I might try and clarify this. I think that what you would be saying, and I think this is correct, and I think this is your point, that providing alcohol to an underage driver, and then the underage driver injures you, the provider, the law has said, as a matter of law, you, the victim, who is also the provider, cannot recover.
Right. It eliminates comparative negligence.
Well, no. It's a matter of law, you cannot recover. Comparative negligence is irrelevant. I mean, it reaches the same way.
Yeah. Comparative negligence is out.
Under this statute, a third party is not a provider.
I think I can clarify for the
that's
court.
That's what you are saying. Now, he is responding to you on comparative negligence is that if John Smith were injured by Adam driving, then the relative liability of all of these people would be considered. That is, Champs and Jason and Adam and Brian all would come into play as to their comparative negligence. But as a matter of law, the position of the defendant here is one who provides cannot be a third party.
Cannot be a plaintiff, and you've explained it much better than I did, Your Honor.
Naturally.
We've heard that third party means third party is a microphone.
I'm sorry. You'll have to take the microphone. There's a microphone on the podium. Do you have the microphone? Is there a microphone?
We've heard that the third party, I'm going to speak to this.
A third party is not separate from the first and second party. A third party is often the part of the transaction.
Well, the common law,
as used in Black's dictionary, says something else. The dictionary definition of third party says something else. Our own ordinary accepted usage of third party from law school on is that a third party is several
third party who has the cause of action is not a party to the transaction, the event which the legislature seeks to deter. That transaction, that event, is a provider or providers. There may be six, seven providers furnishing alcohol to underage minors who pose a risk. That's a transaction. And the third party is separate from that transaction by its common use, by its legal definition, and under the common law. Justice Hallows, whose opinion is the groundstone of the common law, specifically defined third party. And he said what Attorney Nieder says it doesn't mean. He said third party means innocent third party. Justice Hallow's dissent begins with setting out the formula, the elements of the claim. And for the reason I'm concentrating on Justice Hallow's is, as this court well knows, both Sorensen and Kobach said that we adopt completely the rationale of Justice Hallow's dissent and Justice Day's dissent, adding reasons for abrogating immunity. And Justice Hallow sets up the cause of action in the same way that the statute does. We have a first party, a person who, when he knows or should know a person is intoxicated, sells or gives intoxicating liquor to the second person, such a person, the intoxicated person. We have the resulting harm to a third person who is obviously separate from the provider, the providee, and it is the third person who has the cause of action. The first person should be liable with a drunken person under our comparative negligence doctrine. And Justice Hallows goes on to leave no question, to leave plaintiff with no argument that third party in the common law ever meant anything but an innocent third party separate from that evil, that transaction of a provider providing any amount of liquor to an intoxicated person. A driver is just as legally and financially responsible to the innocent victim of his conduct as the supplier when their negligence concurs to cause harm to a third person. Obviously, the term innocent victim and third person are used interchangeably. They are one and the same. And then Justice Hallows goes on to leave no doubt, to describe the cause of action in the common law. The innocent victim may recover against either tortfeasor, either the first or second parties. But under our doctrine of contribution, the joint tortfeasors, the first and second parties, will allocate. But this is who the action belongs to. This answers the question before this court as to what the common law was on third person, as to what the common law meant as to third person. The question before the court is, what does third person mean? And Justice Hallows made it clear that it's an innocent person.
Well, one of the problems about all that is, in that particular case, the third party wasn't involved in this joint drinking and in joint procurement. And the usual case you think about in this area is the guy leaves the bar and hits an innocent person who had nothing to do with any of this. And in trying to look at the law, that would be the case, and that's what all is involved here. In this case, we're dealing with a statute, and we're dealing with a different fact situation than the ordinary one, if it's generally thought about. It seems to me that that the plaintiffs here take the position that the two parties are Champs and the driver, Adams. And the injured third party is Jason.
Well,
so why can't you look at it that way?
We know that...
You deal with Jason. I mean, suppose Jason had brought his own, just drank selfishly from his own bottle, and he didn't share. Mother didn't tell him to share. He didn't share his drinks and didn't kick in his money. Now he's injured. What would your position be?
He's not a provider.
He's not a provider.
But the statute provides...
He's not innocent either.
No, but the statute...
He's not innocent because he knew that the driver was drunk, and he knew he was drunk.
He is
and
innocent.
He violated the law.
He is innocent as to the evil transaction, the furnishing of alcohol to an underage minor or to a drunken person. As to that transaction, he's innocent because he didn't furnish it. And as that's the transaction at which the statute and the common law is aimed to deter, that possibility, Justice, of the third provider, a second provider, a fourth and fifth provider, is not something that springs upon us for the first time in the year 2000. The possibility of that was clear at the time that Garcia was decided and at the time that these decisions were written. And if the court felt that that they should be treated, and those fact situations should be treated any differently, that a procurer, a provider, should be treated somewhat differently than a vendor, there would have been a discussion of it. If it was a tough fact situation that would have made abrogation of the common law more of a question, the majority in Garcia would have questioned it.
I have a little difficulty with your discussion of the common law. The traditional common law, the old common law, was that the provider was not liable for a few years, and there was dissent, and Garcia said that we ought to change the common law. It wasn't, and then finally the court did act, did change the law, which was in effect for a very short time until the legislature changed it again. So
the
common law here is not very effective.
Well, the question before us is strictly this. It's not the whole cause of action. It's the meaning of the word third party in the statute. And as to that meaning, we can look to the common law to find out what the court meant when it used third party, because the court used third party continually in Hallows, in Sorensen, in Jarvis, in all of its determinations and statements of the common law.
So,
and let me just point out that...
Counsel, I just want to...
Sure.
So it's your... I mean, under the... And I guess I'm looking at what the legislature... liability on people selling alcohol, and it talks about in B, should have known underage person was under drinking age. The normal situation, you have 15 underage people, they chip in, and something bad happens. But they should have known. So what you're saying is that a provider, which would be one of these people, they all chip in, that nobody could be held liable. I'm talking about because they provided, that takes them out of the category. That's all I'm saying. When they pool their assets.
No, I believe this, that they none of them have a cause of action.
Right.
Because they are all providers.
Correct.
The statute
is
very careful not to say a provider meaning a vendor, not a procurer is divided into fine lines. The court has to nuance between the provider who provides a nickel, the three
the three beers, the five tequilas. The court doesn't
say
that that's how we're dividing.
You have to speak into the microphone.
Excuse me.
We can hear you fine, but you're not recording.
You think that's what the do you think that's what the legislature meant under B? In other words,
what you're saying is that everybody, as I understand it, gets off the hook because they are a provider. Is that, and we're looking at the intent of the legislature as to how that alcohol was procured.
They don't get off the hook because they are a provider. They are liable, all of them, to any innocent third parties. If there was a family of three that was struck by these two kids' vehicle that night, there was no question that both of them would be providers, as well as Champs, as well as the adult who provided them beer. They don't get off the hook. What I'm saying is they don't get to be first parties, that is, parties who participate in the transaction, just like the vendor, and they don't get to be third parties at the same time. The statute and the common law limited the claim, defined the claim as belonging to this innocent person whose injuries are brought about by the unlawful and negligent sale of alcoholic beverages to minors and intoxicated persons. And the court actually made the leap. Sorensen, of course, adopts entirely Hallows. But what's interesting is that in Sorensen, the court made exactly the same change that the statute made to the common law. Justice Day's dissent is the overall statement of how Justice Day and Justice Hallows view the concept of a dram shop action. First person, a second person, a third person, comparative negligence. The Sorensen court says, we're going to adopt that in its entirety, but we modify it to be applicable to the incident here where the purchaser was a minor. The only change is the second party becomes a minor. The vendor was guilty of a negligent act if he sold intoxicating beverages to someone he should have known was a minor. If the negligence was a substantial factor in causing injury to a third person, the vendor is liable with the driver under the comparative negligence rule. The difference between this and the statute is the statute uses the term provider, which includes procurer, and the second party in the statute is a minor, which is essentially the same. In other words,
this is the same change in common law that the statute makes, the change from Justice Day's formulation.
You're going to have to hold the microphone.
To this formulation, excuse me. And there is no change in who the cause of action belongs to. It belongs to a third person. And policy-wise, let's assume that, like the plaintiffs asserts, it belongs to all the procurers. Well, if it belongs to all the procurers, it belongs to all the vendors. And as the examples pointed out by the court, if the Champs owners are injured by a car driven by these people, they have a cause of action. If there are seven or eight providers, and it is reasonable to think that teenagers drink in packs. I think that's a statement of common knowledge. And those seven or eight providers buy drinks for their buddy, and they put them in the driver's seat, and they're all injured. They are now added as claimants. They are treated as third persons because they didn't contribute 100% of the liquor. Even under a typical vendor bar situation, we don't find one bar contributing 100% of the liquor.
Counsel?
The kids go from bar to bar.
I want to follow up on Justice Wilcox's question, and I think he used the phrase, get off the hook or something. And that's a problem I have that's a problem I have with this case and your argument, so help me with it if you can. And that is the argument that you're making that Jason is the first party and therefore is not a third party. I mean, that makes sense to me. I mean, he's not a stranger. And everything we deal with, there's a party, first party, and the second party, and then you get someone over here that's a third party. I mean, that's the way that I'm used to dealing with it. It makes sense to me, and that's what Judge Frankel said made sense to me. But one of my concerns is, you speak of public policy, the public policy to deter any procurer. So it's kind of tough, but it's meant to be tough. If you have anything to do with procuring, there's no cause of action that you can maintain. And I understand that. But the flip side of it might be the other procurer or procurers, like in this case, get off the hook, get a windfall. Now, I say, that could not have been the intent of the legislature, could it? And so I need you to address that, this intent of the legislature, which results not just in deterring any procurer. We can all think that that may be an intent of the legislature, but to give a windfall in this kind of a case.
There's a balancing. I agree with you that one could reasonably argue that it would deter the vendor even if third parties included providers, because then he would always be liable. But there is another means of accomplishing deterrence, and that is to deny a cause of action to anybody who takes part in the transaction to be remedied. And Daring, the court which upheld the constitutionality of this statute, specifically discussed the rationale. Facilitating compensation for injured underage drinkers is not the only means of attempting to protect people under the legal drinking age. The legislature may have determined that sheltering people by deterring those who might otherwise furnish alcoholic beverages to them rather than compensating the injured underage person would better serve the goals of protecting young people. The person you're speaking of who gets off the hook does not get off the hook because he's guilty of civil and perhaps criminal violations. What happens is that the legislature has determined that the goal of deterrence is best served not by awarding more liability by expanding the scope of the cause of action beyond what it was in the common law, but by punishing those first and second parties who engage in the transaction. And it could just as easily be argued that it's counterproductive to deterrence to award one of the parties who engages in the unlawful transaction with a cause of action. It's just as irrational when you're attempting to deter a liquor owner to give a liquor owner a cause of action, or when you're attempting to deter a procurer to give a procurer a cause of action when his procurement, when his participation in the act the legislature seeks to remedy results in injury. The other thing I wanted to point out is that plaintiff's view is this. Throw the whole thing to the juries, and they'll handle it in comparative negligence.
Speak into the microphone, please.
Excuse me. I'm so sorry.
We're gonna miss most of your argument.
Yes.
The court
in Daring recognized that one of the purposes is to protect the liquor industry from excess liability. That's clear. That's a holding in Daring. Obviously, if we have the packs of teenagers able to sue the liquor liability, the liquor industry, the vendors, we're going to have 10 or 11 plaintiffs where we might otherwise have one or two. We are also going to have an impossible task for juries in ferrying out whose contribution of three beers here versus tequila here made how much of a difference in blood alcohol level. And throwing it all to the juries in comparative negligence is a very hard task for the juries and for the trial court. But I think that the
how
key...
Excuse me for interrupting, but how is that the case, or answer your opposing counsel's argument when the statement is made, well, we don't have to do that because 100% of the alcohol furnished here was furnished by your client?
Well, that is the case where there is only one provider, the bar, but here there is more than one provider. And so your participating in procuring is seen by the legislature as just as bad an act, as just as culpable an act as Champs, and you shouldn't get a cause of action any more than they should. The final point I want to make is it is absolutely clear in the common law that third party has always meant innocent third party. And ZIWA, the case which the plaintiffs rely on to give them a common law basis, was number one, dicta. Number two, specifically recognize the difference between the underage teenager, the parties to the transaction, and third parties. And the statute uses third party for a purpose. It can be none other than its usual meaning, and its usual meaning in the common law. I hope I've left some time for my co-counsel, Mr. Davies.
Not much. Davey, you've got, I estimate, somewhere like 3 to 4 minutes. Zero? You have zero. Thank you.
I'm sorry, Mr. Murray.
Been a very eloquent argument. And very persuasive. Thank you, counsel. Ms. Snyder.
The point is, do you want to let Champs off the hook? That's what it boils down to. And did the legislature want to do that? The legislature had to know that when young people or anybody goes out drinking and they're going to spend the evening at a bar, to take turns buying rounds. That's what happens. That's common nature. That's what happens. And are we saying that the legislature intended that common situation to trigger Champs getting off the hook? Who put the money on the table? This is going to be called the who put the money on the table statute if you go that way. That just makes absolutely no sense to me.
How do you respond to your opposing counsel's comment that it is inconsistent with deterrence to award a provider with a cause of action?
We're not talking about rewarding or awarding anybody anything here. We're talking about whether Champs has immunity. That's different. We're looking at two different things.
Are we looking at whether or not Champs has immunity, or are we looking at whether or not Jason has a cause of action?
From the standpoint of whether Champs is immune, is it clear and unambiguous that the legislature wanted Champs to walk under these circumstances? That's what we're looking at. And I say it's not clear and unambiguous. And from a deterrence standpoint, here's the deal. Do you think that Jason and his friends would be any less likely to go to a bar if they knew they couldn't have a cause of action?
Let me change the hypothetical a bit. Let's say Champs did not, consistent with the statute, have reason to know. These kids looked mature, they showed IDs that were impeccably faked, and so so Champs, although gave 100% of the alcohol, didn't have reason to know that these kids were underage. Should Jason be able to maintain a cause of action against Adam and Brian? And let's assume Brian,
Sure, and it is in dispute as to whether Brian put money on the table, but sure, if it's shown that they were providers and that their alcohol they provided was a substantial factor, then
that
yes.
So if it's shown that all three of them provided, this statute allows for a provider to sue his buddy, the other kid providers, assuming that the 100% deliverer had no reason to know.
Well, that's the situation we have here with Adam. He's also a defendant, and he's being sued by Jason, and that case will go to trial. And now all we want here is to be able to include Champs in that verdict, as it should be. It's not immune.
Let's say Jason provided to Adam. Adam didn't provide anything. Adam was the driver. So you're saying that Jason should be able to bring a cause of action against Adam, and he not should be able to. We're focusing on a statute. Under the terms of this statute, the statute allows for Jason to bring a cause of action against Adam the driver for whom Jason bought the beer.
And those, I lost.
Okay.
The example.
I'm taking Champs out. Forget Champs. Okay. We're looking at the statute, and you're saying that this statute would allow, let's say in a fact situation where Jason bought all the beer for Adam. Adam is the driver. Following me? Mm-hmm. Adam is the driver. Adam causes the injury to Jason. Mm-hmm. Under the terms of this statute, then Jason can maintain a cause of action against Adam. Forget Champs. Forget, you know, this other party. You're saying that this statute allows for this cause of action of Jason, 100% procurer, to bring a cause of action against the driver, Adam.
Well, Adam's immune for providing. He's got a cause of action against Adam, though, for driving the car off the road. It's a negligence cause of action.
So
it's taken out from
the
under
statute.
The statutory this
okay.
action.
Under the terms of the statute, even though Jason, in my hypothetical, is 100% responsible for bringing the alcohol to the party and giving it to Adam, if Adam then drives the car drunker than a skunk because of the alcohol that Jason provided for him, Jason can maintain a cause of action under this statute against Adam.
Jason's a third party and can maintain a cause of action against Adam. They'll be decided on the terms of under terms of comparative negligence.
So in my hypothetical, Jason is the 100% procurer, but he's also first party, and under your interpretation of the statute, with my hypothetical, he would also be considered a third party.
He would be considered a third party. He would be considered a third party. You can wear two hats, and it's particularly appropriate here where you have multiple providers. And that's the situation. Should one of the providers get off the hook? Should they walk? Because there were multiple providers, because Jason intervened. What if he just carried the beer and hadn't even put the money on the bar? Under what the tavern defendants want you to do is say that's enough to keep him from having a cause of action. That, to me, is absurd.
Counsel's red light is on.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Snyder. Thank you, Counsel, and that concludes the hearing on 00-0589 Meyer versus Champs Sports.